Today on Straight Talk Africa, it's not yet Uhuru in Kenya. Observers say history was made September 1st when the Kenyan Supreme Court ruled the presidential vote count was fraudulent. This sending Kenyans back to the election booth October 17th. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali, and today we would like to welcome to our VOA and Straight Talk Africa family our new Ugandan television partner, the NBS television station in the capital, Kampala.
Welcome back, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Ian Bior, your social media reporter.
Today, we are talking about the historic significance of the upcoming Kenyan presidential election rerun.
And coming up later, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook, and Twitter comments, and we'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
Kenya's Supreme Court nullified the nation's presidential election last Friday due to court irregularities and illegalities committed by the electoral board during the vote. My colleague Paul Sisco has more.
The court says the integrity of the election was compromised, making the announced victory of incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta by about 1.4 million votes null and void. And new elections that must take place within 60 days of the August 8th vote are scheduled for October 17th.
A declaration is hereby issued that the presidential election held on 8th August 2017 was not conducted in accordance with the Constitution and the applicable law, rendering the declared results invalid, null, and void.
Raila Odinga, the 72-year-old opposition leader, was inside the jam-packed courtroom when the decision was announced. Odinga and others immediately became jubilant. He left the court with his hands raised in victory.
This indeed is a very historic day for the people of Kenya, and by extension, for the people of the continent of Africa. For the first time in history of African democratization, a ruling has been made by a court nullifying irregular elections of a president.
If you have accepted all the rest of the results, let us accept the ruling. Maraga, don't interfere. And don't think that because our friends shout and we keep quiet, that we are scared of you. No, we are not. We are not. You've done your ruling. We have respected it. Let IEBC do their job. Let them declare the date. And Raila, let us meet at the ballot.
Days earlier, Kenyatta thanked the voters for returning him to office. The opposition's Raila Odinga says senior officials at the election board should resign and face possible prosecution. That will not happen, according to a presidential statement read Monday. It states that the president will not replace the election board ahead of the new vote scheduled for October 17th. Raila Odinga countered, saying his coalition would not participate in a rerun unless given legal and constitutional guarantees, including the removal of some election board officials. He also reiterated his desire for a criminal investigation against them. Paul Sisco, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Joining us here in the Washington studios are two distinguished guests. Anita Regan, an independent consultant and energy policy advisor, and Vincent McCauley, my colleague and host and managing editor of VOA's Africa 54 program. Well, Anita and Vincent, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled.
It's a pleasure to be here.
To host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. And last but not least is John Aristotle Phillips, CEO of Aristotle Incorporated, who joins us from our New York studios. Thank you so much for joining us, John Phillips.
Thank you very much, Shaka, for having me on.
You're most welcome. Let me come to you immediately, Anita. You heard it, of course, on Friday. Mm-hmm. I just happened to be in Zanzibar myself, actually, when I first heard it. Mm-hmm. What was your immediate reaction?
Surprised at the ruling, but on the other side, not really surprised. The issue of the IABC is always going to be in contention since the formation of the IABC in Kenya. So this is just a continuation of issues pertaining to our electoral process that we need to resolve.
Vincent, what about you? And where were you, in fact?
I was here in Washington. I was at home. And for me, it was a great surprise to see that a Kenyan court could actually rule to nullify an election of a president, because it has never happened in Kenya. It has never happened in Africa.
So continent.
Before even thinking about what it means for the Kenyans, I just thought about the historic significance of the judicial systems in Africa, that this is something that will be talked about for many, many years to come.
Very interesting. What about you, John?
Well, I can tell you exactly what I was doing. I was sleeping. It was about 3 in the morning when I got more than one phone call from colleagues in Nairobi who were just overjoyed to the point of tears. And they told me, I couldn't believe it. I thought it was a dream. And I'm still, I marvel at the resilience of the Kenyan Supreme Court and the courage it took for these judges to rule the way they did. It's a tough road ahead, and I'm sure we'll get a chance to talk about that. But I would say this has ramifications not just for Kenya, certainly, or Africa, but for people who are striving to perfect their own experiments with democracy all over the world. Cheating of this nature will not stand, and Kenya has really set the example here for the rest of the world to follow.
Very interesting. Anita, you say, of course, you were surprised, but what about the apparent incontrovertible evidence, not liable to falter?
Well, let's look at it this way, Shaka. The Supreme Court has not yet given us the reasons behind their own decision. It was supposed to have been done within 14 days, and then now it's been extended now to 21 days. So we need to wait and see the reasoning behind their own decision before we can make decisions as to what it should have been and what it could have been. Because anything regarding elections, even here in the United States, there are ways on how we can address these issues. But we also have to ask ourselves, what exactly are we really addressing? Is it the IABC? Is it the presidential people on the presidential ballots? Or is it the actual process? So we need to really find out exactly what it is that we are really trying to address at this particular moment.
When you refer to the United States, of course, you remind me of Florida 2000.
Exactly.
We're talking about George W. Bush and Al Gore.
Absolutely.
But, of course, you know that eventually the U.S. Supreme Court ruled 5-4 in favor of George W. Bush, and that was it.
Yes, that was it. And on top of that, unlike Kenya in this situation, where, I mean, this is something that I also need to look into a little bit in more detail, is that the United States, you have 9 Supreme Court justices. In Kenya, you're supposed to have 7. Yet this particular ruling was done with less than 7. It was 6, and it's supposed to be an odd number.
The 7th was apparently sick.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so was the ruling then done, contravening also to the Constitution, since now we're looking through everything that is set in the Constitution as to how this election needs to be held and everybody's responsibilities and duties on how to go about doing it. So we need to really start re-examining when we do come to this particular situation. Did we truly follow the rule of law as it is written? And how it is that the particular type of election is supposed to be followed, the procedures especially.
Very interesting. What about you, Vincent? Do you have any doubt in your mind that the Supreme Court of Kenya did not actually follow the law?
You know, I still feel that whether, and I'm not really You know, I'm not an attorney, so I won't be presumptuous enough to say that I know every detail about how it should be done legally. But looking at the numbers, I still consider that a majority, ruling, whether the other justice was there, it would still have been 4-3. Regardless of, you know, how he, even if he was to rule in the other way, he would have sided with those who dissented. I think still there would have been a fair ruling, whichever way. I think that's my take on it. Looking at the numbers, it still seemed to favor a ruling to nullify this election.
John, what about you? Do you have any doubts as to how the Supreme Court arrived at its verdict? Do you think that... Go ahead.
No, go on, please.
No, Anita was raising the issue of the 6-2, that in fact there were six judges, as opposed to having an odd number. We're talking about either 7, perhaps, or 5, and probably 3, for that matter. This particular court, of course, constituted at least 6 of those who voted, because the 7th apparently happened to be sick. Is that a problem?
You know, it's not a problem that we have focused on. We're looking ahead now. We, of course, are looking for more detail from the court, but we're looking forward to what's going to happen 40 days from today. And because this is, as your other guest said, this is unprecedented. How you run a campaign and how you communicate with voters and how you put the context of what just happened, your viewers trying to understand what just happened, and against the important lens of what comes next, there are a lot of unknowns. There have been 4 election do-overs, let's call it, that I'm aware of worldwide. And we were involved in the one in Ukraine in 2004. And, of course, the rerun of that election overturned the results of the earlier rigged election. We don't know if that's what's going to happen here, but I think there's a precedent there. So setting aside the Supreme Court decision, I do think comments made by the parties about the Supreme Court, I'm hoping we're going to be able to visit that in this conversation today, because I think it frames what this upcoming election is really about.
Very interesting. Anita, what about reaction from President Uhuru Kenyatta? The first one, of course, everybody said that is a reflection of his statesmanship. But there is the second reaction, which probably disturbed some people, really, because he said, at least from what I saw, the judges are crooks and the judiciary needs fixing.
Okay, point taken on that note, but you can understand that is also done out of frustration. Because for every single part of this particular election process, there's been either a court hearing, there's always questioning the validity of the whole process. So since we had the primary until up to the runoff of the election, there's always been questions. So you become a little bit frustrated. And at least, you know, then at this point when you have judges making this decision, I think it's just basically a more of an emotional response to the actual situation. Then how he truly feels in his heart is a different thing. But I think it's just a human emotion to be frustrated and sometimes say things that we should not be saying. But this is also politics.
But you're a president.
Yes, but even if you're president,
you're
have an interesting...
You're carrying 45 million people on your back.
Well, we have Trump as our president, and we sometimes don't always agree with what he says. But he's expressing his thoughts, whether you agree with them or not.
America has very, very strong institutions there.
They do have strong institutions, and that is where Kenya is right now. We cannot mistrust the exact same institutions that we actually want them to do what we want them to do. In this case, we want the IEBC to be able to conduct what we consider a free and fair election. So we need to give them that deference. But in the age of hacking and the age of alternative facts and fake news, it's very difficult sometimes to even have a discussion on what exactly is it that we need to talk about.
Vincent, I know that at least there is a stereotype about the Kenyan judiciary in the past.
Yes.
That if you had a case, you probably sometimes don't need really to hire a lawyer because, in fact, you could buy a judge. But this seems to be a totally different ball game here.
In fact, the Kenyan judiciary, since a few years ago, has proved to be fairly independent, and it is fighting to really distinguish itself as an independent body. And things have changed fundamentally because judges are no longer appointed. Especially justices of the Supreme Court are not appointed by the president, so they're not beholden to the president. Ideally, this is an independent arm of the government, the judiciary. And that is why it was very disturbing to a great number of Kenyans when the president threatened the chief justice and threatened to fix the Supreme Court. And some of members of his party actually said they should do something about it. This, of course, sounds like a threat to the future independence of the judiciary, something that Kenyans have fought for many decades, as some have died fighting for that. So one of the things that nobody wants to hear is undermining the constitutional independence of the judiciary. There's nothing wrong expressing some element of frustration, but you cannot specifically target and threaten to fix the Supreme Court or any members of the Supreme Court. I think that was a little overboard and very worrying to many people.
So I take it that you think
Shaka,
it might...
Could I say something here?
Yes, please.
Yeah, so I want to agree with your guest. When Kenyatta said he was going to fix the Supreme Court, that was a deliberate choice of words. The Supreme Court of Kenya is not some stray animal that you neuter if you don't get the decision that you want. This is the highest court of the land. And this was a brazen attempt to steal an election from millions and millions of Kenyans who exercised their constitutional right. And the government fell short of delivering the constitutional right of Kenyans to pick their leader. So I think I would echo what the guest just said. Saying you're going to fix the Supreme Court, the next thing you're going to fix is going to be the free press, and then you're going to fix your opponents. And this is not what's needed in Kenya. What's needed in Kenya at this point, as Kenyans I think will agree, is a free and fair election. And more than that, I think you can assume that people who think they're going to fix the judiciary because they ruled the way they did, it's time for them to go.
When you think about the 2010 Constitution, which of course allows the inbuilt checks and balances, where you have three branches of equal government, really, equal powers, so to speak. We're talking about the executive, we're talking about the judiciary system, and of course we're talking about the legislature. Wouldn't this seem to be really, John, again, wouldn't that statement perhaps reflect a bit of, somebody frankly being a little bit unconstitutional, really?
Yeah, I think that's the point. You know, I worked for the opposition during this last election, and there's always a feeling, no matter which candidate there is you're working for, you know, that the system is the cards are stacked against you. You know, and we found the press to be a very valuable ally, in spite of the suspicions, and of course the courts, the way they ruled was not what a lot of people expected, myself included. So I think these constitutional protections are vital. And Kenya is it goes beyond who's going to be the next president. It has to do with what type of a society and what type of a government Kenya is going to have for a long time to come. This can go one of two ways. And I think that's one of the interesting things about how voters are going to calculate where they're going to throw their support on October 17th. It'll be interesting to see if they view this as a referendum on the ruling party and a stopgap or a way to shore up their democracy, as opposed to just bread and butter issues, for instance, or other more specific issues that govern lots of elections. This is the big one.
Thank you very much. During my recent trip to Tanzania, I had the opportunity to talk to Edward Lowassa, a former Tanzanian prime minister and opposition presidential candidate. He gave me his reaction to the Kenyan Supreme Court ruling of September 1st, which declared the Kenyan presidential election null and void. This Supreme Court decision, which a lot of people, frankly, are saying it's a sort of watershed. Your reaction?
It is a very powerful decision, big decision. But I commend the people of Kenya for arriving at this stage. First, I commend the president, Uhuru Kenyatta, for what he has done to allow democracy. This is a result of allowing democracy to prevail in the country.
Is it really about President Uhuru Kenyatta allowing democracy?
These institutions would not have come about if the constitution was not written and if the government was not cooperative. How many other countries did require such a constitution? How many other countries can make a bold decision like that one in Kenya? I think it's a question of the personality in office who understands democracy and appreciates the role of other political parties.
Mr. Rwasa, to what extent were you surprised that the Kenyan Supreme Court asserted its independence?
I was pleasantly happy that a court in Africa can make such a decision. It shows one thing, that we can create strong institutions which can make check and balances on their own.
Do you think that such a decision could happen in the United Republic of Tanzania, for example?
I won't count my chicks before they hatch. Let's cross the bridge when we get there.
I see. What about the role of the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission? Well, a lot of people are saying, frankly, that it has lost credibility. If you agree with those people who say it has lost credibility, who should now be the party that organizes the next elections? Can the IEBC really be in a position to organize the next elections, given that a lot of people are saying it does not have the moral authority and has, in their view, lost integrity?
It lost credibility before it was gained. Before it had it, it had lost it. I agree with those who are saying it is difficult to trust them. But, you know, you can make a final decision when we've read the judgment. The judgment is not out, so we don't know what are the errors they did.
I also spoke with Omar Said Shaban, president of the Zanzibar Law Society, who also talked about the Kenyan Supreme Court ruling.
The respect to the judiciary.
But wait a minute, Omar, what about also the fact that he also was quoted as saying that five judges do not really have the mandate to reverse or overturn what he characterized as the will of the people?
Among all remarks he made, Supreme Court judges have done what they are mandated to do by the Constitution of Kenya, and they have performed their job. They were not a part of the electoral process. They are part of the electoral process because at the end, by Constitution of Kenya, the elections, the Supreme Court is part of the process at the end. So they did what their job. They managed the elections. Supreme Court did what they have to do. And they have this mandate by Constitution of Kenya to either validate the election or invalidate the election. So these remarks by President Uhuru Kenyatta saying that five people cannot defeat what he categorically say at the will of the people is not correct.
Where did the Kenyan Supreme Court find the power, the courage, the confidence?
I think the confidence began with the pillars that has been stalled in the Constitution itself. But the second, the confidence can be found by the hopes and confidence that the people of Kenyans have put to the judiciary. It is the judiciary made up of the people. It is the judiciary that was the result of the Kenyans' people when they enacted their constitution in 2010. So it is the people-generated judiciary. Kenyans have changed the old system where we have in many African countries, where you have judges appointed by a single person.
called the president. Kenyans have gone out. The transparency of appointing judges that Kenyans are exercising build confidence to the judiciary. So this one, the transparency also even in conducting these type of petitions. So they have nothing to fear.
Well, Vincent, I should point out to you, by the way, that you know as well as I do that Commissioner of IEBC, Dr. Rosalind Kwamboka Akombe, used to be very much interested, frankly, in talking to us.
Yes.
But when VOA contacted her this time around, she said she needed clearance from the IEBC chairman, Wafula Chebukati, and so did Andrew Limo, the IEBC spokesman, who actually said he needed a clearance from above in order to participate in today's program.
Yes.
What do you read into that?
What I'm reading into this is that first you have to understand the pressure that has been brought upon the IEBC, not only in the way it's conducting itself, but even in the way it's presenting itself to the public now. You can understand that they must want to control the message. The chairman must feel that he needs to control the message so that nobody goes out there and says anything that they may have to retract later. But again, there is a lot of reorganization. Nobody's so sure what they really are supposed to be doing. What are their roles? The chairman, Mr. Chebukati, of course, announced new officials who he said are going to be handling this rerun. He announced about six names of new people. But at the same time, Jubilee has rejected that list. It's saying they believe some of those are partisan.
Very partisan.
So you can imagine there's a lot that is going on within the IEBC, and they're not even so sure about how the IEBC will look like by the time we go to this rerun. So I'm sure the idea is to control the message, make sure nobody's going out there and saying things that they may have to retract later.
I know that you have been talking to a lot of people in Kenya, and a lot of Kenyans. To what extent do Kenyans really still have confidence in the ability of the electoral body to actually be the one that runs the next election on October 17?
You see, as John said, the lawyer from Zanzibar said, I think it's Lowassa, that the IBC actually has been under some suspicion from way before the election.
Correct.
And this has been something that unfortunately has followed all the electoral commissions, right from the one of 2007 that was led by Samuel Kivuitu, our friend who passed on, and until even the one that held the conducted the 2013 elections. Very few people. I don't know how to. I cannot necessarily give accurate figures, but what a number of people have doubts about the credibility of the IEBC, mm-hmm. even when it conducted the election that was just conducted. So even right now, there are questions. There's a cloud over the IEBC. However they reconstituted, people still hold it in suspicion. And so it will take quite a bit of faith, a real leap of faith, actually, for people to believe that it can conduct a credible election.
Very interesting. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, including our social media segment. So please, don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
And not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them, today, not tomorrow. So let's connect, let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies. Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known. It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The
beat those old translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct.
And adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at www.voanews.com/African Beat.
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. It's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Ayen Bior. Take it away, Ayen.
Well, thanks, Shaka. A new date has been set for the rerun of the Kenyan presidential election. But many doubt whether the existing Electoral Commission possesses the necessary integrity to organize a fresh election. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, does the Kenyan Independent Electoral Boundaries Commission have the credibility to organize a rerun of the presidential election on October 17th? Well, before we begin, I'd like to thank all of you for using all our social media platforms to communicate with us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Use the hashtag KenyaElections. And if you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. And speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Abel Elibarkari from Tanzania, who writes, yes, but after the reshuffle of the commissioners who brought trouble to the IEBC and caused the presidential results to be nullified by court. And we have another tweet from Onuke Christian from Kenya. He says, what do you use to measure or ascertain credibility? Is it what Mr. Odinga says or what? No election is perfect worldwide. Well, let's go to our comment of the week from Facebook fan Tumwekasi Brame in Uganda, who writes, indeed, it's a precedent now set in Africa. The problem now is whether the two competing teams will accept results from the reruns, since the opposition already mistrusts the IEBC and that the Kenyan judiciary seems to be a refuge for any aggrieved party. Well, let's go to another comment from Facebook fan Sebastian Jasmine in Israel, who writes, no, since multiple irregularities, and illegalities were noted in the most recent election by the same team, it definitely does not qualify them to participate in the rerun for the same intended mistake to be repeated. Very interesting. And our last Facebook comment comes from Stefano Ochieno in Tanzania, who writes, Odinga is right. The rush to repeat the polls this soon makes us smell a rat. They must clean the IEBC and bring to justice culprits. The technology must be secured and they should be more transparent. Well, clearly a lot of opinions on a critical topic. And now a reminder that we appreciate all of the audience feedback, so please keep them coming. And if you're a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com, or post your comment on our Facebook page. Enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. You can interact with our show as it's streaming live. And be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website, or you can simply watch us live on your mobile device. Download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. On the next, Straight Talk Africa, fresh off a three-nation Africa visit to the Democratic Republic of Congo, Zambia, and Tanzania. Shaka Sali talks about the fascinating people he met and the challenges he encountered, reporting on democracy in Africa. On the road with Shaka on the next Straight Talk Africa. Well, that's all for today's social media segment. Shaka, you and the guest have a lot of social media comments to discuss. Back to you.
Ayen, thank you very much indeed. And of course, for sharing with us some social media reaction from our audience. Well, today, of course, we are discussing the historic significance of the upcoming Kenyan presidential election rerun. Our guest, Anita Regan, an independent consultant and energy policy advisor, my colleague Vincent Macaulay, host and managing editor of VOA's Africa 54 program, And John Aristotle Phillips, CEO of Aristotle Inc., who joins us from our New York bureau. Well, I have to say, Anita and Vincent and John, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to talk to the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. John, let me come to you. Your reaction. You obviously had the social media reaction from our audience. What is your immediate reaction to that?
Well, you know, it's so interesting because it was a broad range of opinions about the credibility of the IEBC. In the context of the campaign before August 8th, we did some polling on the Kenyans' expectations of the IEBC and whether they had confidence in the IEBC's ability to run a credible, fair election. And we were struck by how much trust Kenyans placed in the IEBC. We thought, given the history, that it would be in the 20s, but it wasn't. It was higher than 20%, but it was higher than that. Now, how much trust Kenyans retain in the IEBC is to be seen. You know, the solution here is not to, it's as Ronald Reagan used to say to the Russians, trust but verify. And I think what needs to be done here is the process needs to be so transparent and so verifiable that Kenyans in all walks of life can accept this. Look, it's very important for the next government in Kenya. There are many, many problems facing the people of Kenya and the country. And it's very important that the government be seen as legitimate and to have received the support of the Kenyan people. If this next go-round is flawed, the solution there is they're going to have to do it again. And so they're going to keep doing this until the election is conducted fairly and transparently. And that message has to sink in at the IEBC, to the international observers, and also to the government.
What about you, Anita? Trust but verify. How can the IEBC really be trusted?
Let me say it this way. You've heard of the Goldilocks principle, I believe, where there's three bears. And you have Papa Bear's bowl, where they said it's a little bit too hot. Mm-hmm. And then Mama's bowl is too cold. And then the baby bear's bowl, it is just right. We have to find something and balance it out, something that will work for Kenya. What has happened is that what they had deployed as our process for doing the election is something that we also have to look into. Did we need to do a technology-based kind of election? Why didn't we just simply not do a ballot paper type of election? So we chose a system, first of all, that was never even trusted in the first place. And in the age of hacking and everything that's going on, half of this information that we're getting means that somebody had access to a server from somewhere for them to be able to use, to then use that as a way of bringing it up to the court to say that this particular type of election is compromised.
This brings us to the murder or the death or the assassination of Chris Musanda, correct?
Yeah, and that also adds on now to the whole idea of the credibility of the IEBC.
And supporters of Jubilee, in fact, were saying that, look, there was nothing political. This was a love triangle. Because you remember, they killed along Chris, a young lady of 21, who actually happened to be Kikuyu, who was supposed to be graduating from college.
Yes, but you see, these are the little things that keep happening around every single time we have elections. There's always a scandal. There's always mistrust.
This is more than a scandal.
But this is also political. We basically politicize every aspect of everything that we do. The independence of the Boundaries Commission, it's become politicized. The courts also becoming politicized by the way that we respond and comment to them. So we basically have to allow the ABC. There are certain criteria that are supposed to be holding an election. It's supposed to be simple, but then we have forms 34A, 34B, 34C. That in itself is complicated. Then you're supposed to be accurate. We do not know where that information was coming from. You're supposed to have signatures of all the agents which were there, which were not there. Watermarks are supposed to have been shown on the forms. So there's all these things that were occurring. Was that part of the IEBC process that they have put in place? So we might also start looking into the process in which they had used and the type of technology and the ballots and everything else that has been printed to be able to conduct this particular type of election. But one thing that I think that the IEBC needs to do right now is to be simple and transparent right now. But so far, a lot of things we are talking about is not transparent. We do not know the reasoning and the cause. So we're just talking based on hearsay, could have been a signature, should have been here. We really do not know. And this is maybe something that will also be looked at after the upcoming run-up.
Listen, why were the seven secretariat members of the IEBC, led by the CEO Ezra Chiroba, sidelined during this week's reorganization of the new team to manage the presidential rerun of October 17th?
Inside sources tell me that there were disagreements as to how they conducted themselves during this whole process.
Asked, from what I heard, to step aside?
Yes, to step aside. They refused to do so.
Do they have the power
to refuse to resign?
To do so?
I'm not so sure that they couldn't be fired, but they were not willing to do so. But there were some elements of their conduct and their relationship with the chairman which made them feel that he cannot possibly work with them. Mm-hmm. But remember also Raila Odinga's team had clearly suggested that those particular ones were suspected to be partisan or to have been involved in some interference or some manipulation of the process.
Yes.
And therefore, they requested that for the sake of the credibility of the process, they should step aside. And the chairman went ahead and did that. And now we hear the Jubilee coalition doesn't trust most of those that have been appointed.
Exactly.
Now, if you ask me, though, I think this is very critical that both sides should have an interest in having a really, truly credible and trusted IEBC before the next election.
That's
because
true.
At the end of the day, it doesn't matter how you perform, as the Supreme Court said, it is a process. If you do not ensure that this process is going to be credible, it is going to be another waste of time, or whoever wins, there will be this ominous cloud that is hanging over their results. So it should be an interest, something of interest to both parties to make sure that the Electoral Commission is trustworthy.
Any particular reason why Ezra Chiroba and the chairman Wafula Chebukati are actually blaming each other? Because Chiroba was actually saying that it is Chebukati who should carry his own cross.
Mm-hmm. Now,
and on the other side,
that
the
has
other
been
hand,
very confusing, because during that time we were there, and one of the things that came out very clearly, and those who are sitting with me inside the Bomas of Kenya will tell you that Chairman Chebukati would come out and say one thing, and Ezra will come back and contradict it. For example, the chairman, I was there, and I wanted to ask him a question, but we ran out of time. He said very clearly, you've heard that the people questioning the numbers that we are streaming are live. I want you to know that these are just these are interim numbers. They are not to be taken seriously. Don't worry about it. We are going to use the form A34 and the others to verify the results. So ignore those numbers.
So where were they being displayed?
That was the question. And Ezra comes later and says, well, whatever you see here is pretty much similar to what we have. So in a way, you can trust these numbers. There was a clear discordance between the chairman and the CEO. And at that time, we could not tell why, because everybody was sitting there, and all my colleagues and other people were sitting in that Bomas of Kenya would tell you that we kept getting mixed information from the chairman and the CEO. So it looks like there had been a working relationship problem way before now. And I think they figured that there's no way they're going to work together at this point. But the NASA coalition seemed to favor that the chairman stays on. I think they did not really demand that the chairman resign.
Right.
And so he seems to have goodwill on both sides. So he just needed to rejig the team. It's not satisfactory to everybody, so we don't know if Jubilee will accept this new team they call the Dream Team or what will happen then if they reject it.
Very interesting. John, I hope that you are following. Are you?
I am, yes.
Now, John, of course, we're talking about the IEBC commissioners who have actually been in place for the last 7 months. And you obviously have the Secretariat, which until recently was obviously, led by Ezra Chiroba, has actually been in for a very, very long time. Who do you think is at the heart of this particular election, perhaps being obviously not having any credibility? Is it the commissioners who have been on the job for 7 months, or is it in fact the Secretariat?
You know, from my perspective, I'm not an expert on this. I read the document that NASA submitted in terms of the request that they had for the election to be, for changes to be made, and they struck me as reasonable requests. But I'm not an expert in terms of the personnel, the individuals. I do think that, 40 days is a lifetime in politics, and whoever is responsible for preparing for a free and fair election is going to be under a microscope. Every move is going to be questioned. Every procedure is going to be checked again. This just has to be done in the light of day. It's hard to cheat if everyone is watching, because that's how the system is supposed to be set up. And we have a specific set of requirements that NASA has put forward. They are reasonable requirements. There's no reason they shouldn't be met. These are not against the president. These are for the Kenyan people to have confidence that their votes are being counted.
Now, you tell us, of course, that you worked with NASA. Do you still work with NASA?
Yes.
Tell us a bit about how you came on board, and in fact, how you were deported. And if you were deported, who deported you? They got you from Westlands. There was a NASA tally center, which obviously was stormed by people who some said were thugs, and yet it seems they were state agents.
Right. So there are lots of questions regarding the run-up to the election and the actions taken by the government to make it difficult for there to be transparency instituted by those who were favoring NASA. We were never charged with anything when we were deported. And we talked about this almost a month ago, Shaka, on this show.
Yes.
What happened to my colleague and I is relatively unimportant. We were brought in months earlier to assist in the election, in the campaign process. And we're working closely with Raila and his excellent team. What's more disturbing to us is that there's been no answer as to who ordered the raid on the parallel vote counting center that had been established by NASA and the destruction of the equipment there. Who ordered that? Why is it so difficult to have accountability in the Kenyan security services and the political structure for somebody to say, I sent those armed men in there to do this? And then, of course, the big question is, who ordered Chris Masondo's murder? This is information that the Kenyan people have a right to know. And if this information, you can expect, I've seen enough campaigns, I can tell you, you can expect there to be new developments between now and October 17th. And I would be very surprised if the leaks aren't started from within the government or the security services as people start to abandon ship on this regime that is doing anything to cling to power. And so I think we'll have some answers in terms of who ordered these steps be taken. And I think the IEBC and the staff are right in the crosshairs.
John, when you were deported, what was the reason given to you? Did they somehow associate you, for example, with the NASA Tari Center in the Westlands?
They didn't give us a reason. The closest they came was some of the people who abducted us referred to me as a terrorist, but they never charged us with anything. So we were not allowed to contact the U.S. Embassy, for instance, or the Canadian Embassy in the case of my colleague, and we were detained for a total of 26 hours. But again, what happened to us is almost unimportant. What happened with the tallying center and then, of course, with the election-related violence, that's where the serious business was. And that's what Kenyans should consider as they evaluate these two choices going into Election Day. Ultimately, Kenyans need to decide what kind of government they're going to have. They need to decide if there's going to be rule of law, if elections are going to be conducted fairly. And this is about also putting food on the table for many, many Kenyans. The machinations and the conspiracies at the top, that's interesting to a lot of people, to you and to me, and it's important. It is important. But ultimately, what this is about is who is best equipped to protect the rights of Kenyans and to lead Kenya forward into the future. I obviously think that's Raila Odinga by a mile.
Let us hear from one of the current Kenyans here. Yeah.
So, John, what happened to you? I mean, you may be some American guy and some fellow from Canada, but what happened to you was actually very, very important to us as journalists in the country at that time, because what was so disturbing is that we saw this raid and then we were told that two individuals were arrested and deported. I wanted to know, who are these guys, and why were they deported? I mean, the procedure is we expect a person to be arrested, perhaps charged with something, and then deportation is what happens at the end.
Yes.
So we never got to know.
At the end of the trial.
Yes, exactly, at the end of the trial. So this was actually very troubling to all of us as journalists. We tried to dig into this, find out, who are these people, and what did they do? Why were they deported so quickly? I think it happened over a period of, 12, 24 hours or something like that, or 36 hours. And for us as journalists in Kenya, that was extremely disturbing, especially happening at that time. And I don't think many of us have completely gone away from that story, as peripheral as it may look. But it was very disturbing in terms of, how do we operate as a nation? How do we have people arrested and deported, and they're foreigners? Who are these people? What were they doing in the country, and why were they deported so quickly? Who wanted them deported? Those were questions that were never answered to us.
What about the other two Ghanaians who were also actually supposed to be joining the NASA team? They landed at Jomo Kenyatta International Airport. They were apprehended, detained, and put on the fastest flight back to Accra.
Exactly.
What about that?
Similar kind of a situation. And we were never really given the details. And so it left us very, very disturbed, because we expect in a very civilized country, which we believe Kenya is, people to be apprehended, and we should understand why, and then be given reason, and probably they should be taken to court in broad daylight so that we can go there and listen and understand why they have been arrested. And so them being arrested and being sent away left many people very suspicious on, you know, what the government's doing. So I don't think that was a very smart move by the government. It wasn't really great.
But Vincent, it doesn't really take the brains of a rocket engineer to figure it out. There is only one party, frankly, that has the mandate to deport foreigners or what have you. It must be the government, correct?
Of course. The government has their mandate to do that,
and
has
their
authority. The issue for all of us was, why was it done in the manner in which it was done? Why was it not made public? If these people have committed certain crimes, why were they not charged? Why were they quickly deported? We didn't even get to know these guys. I don't even know if we had any pictures of them, you know, prominently in any of the newspapers. So that was disturbing. It's the conduct of the authorities, not so much about the mandate. And of course, any government has a right to take action against people they may perceive to be a danger of some sort to the society. But then you have to see what that charge is. And that was denied to Kenyans who have interest in a rule of law. That was denied.
Is this the first time that you are interacting or
seriously,
actually seeing John Arisoto Phillips?
Exactly. And, you know, I'm delighted to make acquaintance with John.
A resident of Westlands.
Exactly.
He probably hung out around Soho.
Yeah, so you should know that I took a lot of, you know, there were so many hours I spent trying to find out more about you, John, and to just know why you were deported that quickly. You know, that was a mystery to most of us. And so it's so interesting to kind of get to interact with you.
Right. Well, thank you for your, I appreciate that.
So, Anita, what is the way forward, really, for Kenya to distinguish itself as a mature democracy?
Well, the way forward is that we have to trust in something. And we need to remove politics in everything that we do and discuss. And I think we've been doing it for so long that politics always starts from the top and then it trickles down to the bottom. But I think we now need to put some trust. We may have doubts, and there are a lot of issues that can arise during an election, but we should be able to give that process the ability to perform. Until that happens, we're never going to have a credible election.
What about some people who think that probably the IEBC really need to get a sort of quote-unquote foreign aid so that you have a sort of hybrid involving some independent international experts?
Well, we have John over there, you know, helping NASA. No, but he's helping in the electoral process. He's helping a candidate do what they need to do to be able to participate in this system. But this system is designed in a certain way that we cannot always accommodate everything from the outside. Our ballots are printed in Dubai.
Yes.
The machines we have come from either France or
yes,
UK. And
so France.
There's always the chicken gate. There's always a foreign element in every part of our election process. We need to start trusting our own institutions to do what they need to do. And I think that there are very qualified people in Kenya to be able to do that.
Despite having, of course, had what they used to characterize as Goran Heights, one of the oldest engineering schools at the University of Nairobi.
And one of the things, before we start, also, Vincent, is the same thing as you're saying. The chairman and the CEO of the IABC, they disagree because half of them are trying to figure out which is the best way moving forward. You're bound to disagree. And then when you bring in technology, we're not really prepared to mitigate any possibilities of it going down. Maybe there's no electricity or there's not enough ballot papers or there are too many ballot papers. We're still trying to figure out is what language can we agree on moving forward that will be able then to build in this credibility and trust in our institutions to do what they need to do.
Let me give John an opportunity to at least 2 minutes. I'll come to you.
Yeah. Okay.
John, what about you? Any specific recommendations here that would help create or bring about an election that would be credible?
Well, I mean, I predict.
Yeah.
I predict that Kenyans are going to turn out in record numbers on the 17th, and. You know, there's no way to know how Kenyans are going to decide, but this is, I think, going to be a judgment on what's happened this year so far. But to some extent, but more than that, I believe Kenyans are going to decide what kind of a government they want going forward.
Okay. Okay.
Do they want an independent Supreme Court or not?
Okay.
And how do they want their country to be run?
Thank you very much. Looks like what you are saying really is that your client, Raila Amolo Odinga, has the momentum. Well, on that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Anita Reagan, Vincent McCauley, and John Aristotle Phillips. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning's Daybreak Africa with James Batte. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Kenya. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.